I'm Pat Morrison. The city of Los Angeles has a trash collection service, but you wouldn't know it by some of the streets or the 800 miles of alleys in the city of Los Angeles. Last year alone, enough trash was dumped illegally in those streets and alleys to cover an acre of land and rise 12 stories high. It cost $12 million to clean up, but there are only two crews, a total of 10 people, to clean up some of the areas that are most prone to dumping, South Los Angeles and other parts of town. Robert Lopez is a reporter for the Los Angeles Times who's been chronicling this in print and on video and in photographs for a couple of months. Robert, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thank you for inviting me.
What? How big a problem is this? I suppose if you live in neighborhoods where this is an issue, the dumping of stuff instead of collecting by city trash collectors is an aesthetic problem, a health problem, and in all fashions, just an interference with quality of life.
It's a big problem, Pat. As I reported, 50% of the illegal dumping roughly occurs in the three council districts that make up South Los Angeles. During a study that was done in 2005, those three council districts actually had four times the amount of illegal rubbish dumped there than all the other 12 council districts combined. And, you know, it's not just a South L.A. problem. The important point to make here is that this is an environmental problem that can impact all of us. Much of this debris, oil, other contaminants can make its way to the sewer systems and into our oceans. So this is something that affects everyone, ultimately, not counting the money that taxpayers all pay to foot the cleanup bill.
Why is it a problem? There's already trash collection. If you have a sofa you want to get rid of, you call 311 and arrange for a big item, bulky item pickup with the city. Why should anybody dump in the alleys and streets?
Well, I think it's a complex reason. Yes, you can call 311. Many people do. I found that during my interviews up and down the area there, a number of people didn't really know exactly who to call. And in addition, much of this refuse appears to be dumped by outsiders. There's construction rubble. There's used tires. There's materials that one would have to pay to dump at a local hauling dump. And according to a city report I just saw, 80% of those apprehended for illegal dumping were residents of neighboring cities. So it does appear that a lot of this is being done by outsiders, though city officials do blame residents for some of this rubbish, and I did obviously see a lot of household rubbish, but it's very hard to tell where that came from.
So people bring things from construction sites that may not even be in the city and dump them in the city?
Yes, that has definitely occurred, and I can tell you that I saw places where, you know, there was concrete rubble thrown in alleys and weeds 3 to 4 feet high growing out of it. So obviously this stuff had been sitting there for some time.
Wow. Now, the city installed surveillance cameras and used to have people who would make arrests for illegal dumping. What happened to that program?
Well, as it turns out, those surveillance cameras, it appears, have not been that effective. They don't have a technology that's known as license plate recognition. That is, the still images are blurry, and as I understand, have not been very helpful in making arrests and prosecutions. City officials at Public Works, in fact, couldn't tell me of a single prosecution that was made as a result of these cameras. And I went to two alleys in Watts in which cameras were protecting the entryways, and there were dead animals right there, among other things, in plain view of the cameras. So I think it was clear in those two situations that the cameras did little to stop dumping. What the city wants to do, and once again it's a matter of money, they'd like to get really state-of-the-art live cameras that take video feeds and do have sort of a recognition capability so that investigators can monitor these things from a panel somewhere and see multiple areas at the same time, and not only see those areas but also be able to see the license plates on vehicles that come in to do dumping in these areas.
And Robert, you found some trash version of the broken windows phenomenon, that trash attracted trash. I think, what was it, a fiberglass boat?
Yeah, that sat unbelievably at 108th Street and Wadsworth Avenue. I saw it sit for 4 weeks, and when I first came upon this, as I was sort of driving around looking for examples to illustrate the problem, there was one sofa and a ripped-up stuffed chair, several banks of rubbish, including a broken plasterboard, some grass clippings. And within that four-week period, there ended up being five sofas that ultimately blocked the entire sidewalk and even more household rubbish thrown there, and in addition, rubbish that was thrown around the boat.
So it attracted more trash just by being there as discarded and ignored.
Yeah, people see this these areas where there's trash, and you know, basically they just continue to dump more trash there. I mean, it sort of serves as a magnet, if you will.
Jan Perry represents the 9th District as a member of the Los Angeles City Council, one of those three districts where we heard that trash dumping, illegal dumping, is most prevalent. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
This has to do in part with your district. Mm-hmm. What's the problem?
The problem is that people who do dumping are inconsiderate. They have no sensitivity to the fact that people live in this community and do business and work in this community. And we have a large warehouse area. There's the Goodyear Tract, which is about 300 acres. Lots of places to hide and to dump. But among the most inconsiderate are people who remodel their houses and dump all their trash out on the sidewalk and then don't follow through on calling 311 in a timely way to get it up. I've had some horrible experiences myself. We had to get a homeless fellow out from behind a church, and it took us 10 trucks to take out his junk, and then a skip loader to take out another 75 yards of it. And after, he had to be taken to the hospital because he had a staph infection. And after we were all done, we had to sanitize the alley with the hazmat unit and a mixture of Clorox and other things just to make it safe for people to walk through.
Wow. So how much of this, Jan Perry, has to do that with people who simply don't know that the city can provide sanitation, that it will come pick up things, and how much of it is people who are afraid to call and talk to the authorities or who just don't want to be bothered?
Well, you know, I think it's a mixture of a lot of things. I think it's a mixture of people, as Robert mentioned, who are coming from neighboring cities and dumping their recycled tires and all sorts of things. And then, you know, people get frustrated. They're busy living their own lives. And, you know, they may not want to keep calling 311 every day. And when I spoke with Robert yesterday, I asked him to put our telephone numbers in the newspaper article today so that people would know that they can call us and ask us to intervene on their behalf.
You mean call the city council
offices? Call the city council office, and we can help them get expedited response to their, particularly when you have dead animals. That is a health risk. Poses a risk to anybody who comes near that kind of a situation. It's dangerous.
Robert Lopez, the LA Times, has there been a slip betwixt cup and lip? Do people call 311 and nothing happens, or at least happens very slowly? And if so, why is that the case?
In some cases, yes, that has occurred. I actually quoted a woman in my article who has had to call on a number of occasions, and I heard from Councilwoman Hahn's office that they've had experiences with constituents who have basically tried calling 311 and not received a response. I think part of the problem is that there's just, at times, depending on the situations, a backlog of calls, and there's only so many crews that can go out there. And so it sometimes can take time. The bottom line is, though, that as a result, refuse sometimes sits for weeks and creates, as the councilman said, health hazards, especially when it involves dead animals.
Mm-hmm. One thing your story pointed out, I believe, is that they try to distribute the dump trash crews equally throughout the city, although the problem is not equally existing throughout the city. Is that right, Robert Lopez?
That is absolutely right. As I stated earlier, about half the rubbish dumped illegally is in the south side of the city, yet, you know, that area had only about a third of the arrests in the last 6 years, and the public works investigators try to spread this out evenly in all council districts where dumping occurs. Now, people in the south end would argue, many of them would argue that, well, we have the bigger problem and we should get the emphasis. The city is seeking a grant, however, that would get city money to set up a special enforcement zone on the south end to target more emphasis on the 50 most problem alleys in those areas.
Nazario Sauceda is Assistant Director of the Bureau of Street Services at the City of Los Angeles Public Works. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Why would you not send more crews where the problem is the worst?
Well, basically what we do, when we receive a call, let's say, from a resident requesting the service, like Robert said, we receive hundreds of calls, you know, per day, per week, and our first concern is to make the streets safe and passable. So what we do is we send our investigators, we send our supervisors to assess what is the condition of the street or the alley. Certainly, if if I have to inspect two locations and one is an alley that is totally blocked and will not allow for the passage of an emergency vehicle, let's say a fire truck, an ambulance or something like that, that location has priority over an alley that has maybe a couch or just something on the side. So those are the things that we need to take into consideration. Not only, you know, the call, which, by the way, all locations are inspected, but like Robert said, it's a matter of resources, and you have to prioritize in order to provide safety and a passable street or alley for the residents.
Jan Perry, the council member from the 9th District, of course, every council member wants his or her district to be attended to. But how can priorities be reset, especially in times of budget cuts?
Well, one thing we've done over in the 9th is work with the CRA to provide us with some funds to continue to fund our South Los Angeles beautification team. These are at-risk youth who are our rapid response team when people call in with smaller dumped situations, not the big ones with concrete because they don't have the equipment, but they're kind of the infill team to bridge the gap between sanitation and people in the community, and they tend to clean the major corridors. It's just one way to bridge a gap, but it's been very helpful to us, and you know, I just want to encourage people to continue to call in because we can't see everything everywhere all the time, and it helps us when people call in. I mean, it also helps us set our priorities. You know, when they tell us what's been dumped. And, you know, our sanitation workers are stretched to the limit. We do need more help. We need more help. We need more funding. And, you know, right now it's just not enough, obviously.
You can call in and let us know what experiences you have had trying to get trash cleaned up from your neighborhood, from your alleys and streets. 866-893-5722 is the number here, 866-893-KPCC. In a follow-up story in the Times today, the mayor has ordered a comprehensive report to find out why this illegally dumped refuse has been allowed to sit for weeks in alleys. To follow up on this and see what might be done, Nazario Sauceda with the Bureau of Street Services. Is there some kind of rapid response in the works right now with your office in the wake of this time study?
Well, certainly, this is an issue that this is a problem that is not exclusive of the city of L.A. and certainly is not a problem that has an easy solution. I think Robert and Councilmember Perry were very accurate by stating that this doesn't have a quick solution. We need everybody's participation. We need the community's participation. They are the eyes of the city. They can, the sooner they let us know about a location that has illegal dumping, you know, the sooner we can respond. Robert mentioned...
All right, we'll come back to that after this. We're going to be talking more about the trash dumped illegally in the streets and alleys of the city of Los Angeles and what the city plans to do about it. This is 89.3 KPCC, Southern California Public Radio.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is made possible by the W.M. Keck Foundation, supporting community-based organizations in Southern California and advancements in science, medical research, and higher education nationwide.
Programming supported by DoctorsUnite.org, where physicians from around the nation are standing together to protect their patients and their profession through the open letter from America's physicians. More about the letter at DoctorsUnite.org. Good afternoon. I'm Hetty Lynn Hurtis. A military judge has dismissed charges against a Marine officer accused of failing to investigate the killings of 24 Iraqis. Charges were dismissed today against Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Chazani after defense attorneys raised concerns that a four-star general overseeing the prosecution was improperly influenced by an investigator probing the shootings in Haditha 3 years ago. Chazani was the highest-ranking officer implicated in the case. Almost 50 gay couples stood in line at 8 this morning when the L.A. County Registrar Recorder in Norwalk opened to issue marriage licenses. Bonnie Milan of Long Beach and Chelsea Thompson of Anaheim, both 24, camped out at the building's front lawn overnight. They were the first in line. Thompson said they both wanted to participate in this day.
Well, we came down, well, first of all, to get married because we love each other and that's what we wanted to do. And also because it's such a huge day for the community that we wanted to be down, show our support for everybody, and, you know, just be part of this really important day.
At various times, opponents of same-sex marriage arrived at Norwalk to protest. Two held up homemade signs with biblical passages. The third carried a Bible and approached gay and lesbian couples to speak with them. Well, one of those taking out a license today, actor George Takei, who joins Pat Morrison in just a few minutes. No let-up in the heat for the next few days. Look for highs in the upper 80s to upper 90s through Friday, and then it should cool down a few degrees over the weekend. It's 2:21.
I'm Pat Morrison. The city of Los Angeles has trash pickup. Not everybody takes advantage of it because last year, more than 200,000 cubic yards of trash, enough to cover an acre 12 stories deep, was dumped illegally in alleys and streets citywide. Most of it was in three of the 15 council districts. It cost $12 million to clean up. The Los Angeles Times wrote about it, had videos and photographs of the illegally dumped trash. The next question is, now what? What have you done? What problems have you had trying to get the city to clean up some of these trash dumps? Give us a call at 866-893-5722 and let us know what you encountered. One of the people who has been trying to do that is Jennifer Moran with the East Hollywood Council. Thank you very much for joining me.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you very much, Ms. Moran.
Hi.
So what problems has the East Hollywood Neighborhood Council encountered in trying to clean up trash illegally dumped in the alleys and streets there?
Well, we usually have a handful of people who are sort of specifically monitoring their area, and I'm one of those people, and in my, you know, maybe 12 streets around my house and including alleys, I call in about 12 to 15 items every other week, and 311 is pretty responsive. One time they failed to pick up, and it was because the person who took my call didn't punch in any of the data I gave him. But for the most part, they're good. The only thing that doesn't work with 311 is picking up things in the alley or picking up non-specific refuse. They won't. They'll pick up a couch or a mattress or a bed. They won't pick up a bag of trash that's in the alley or a pile of trash.
Nazario Sauceda with Bureau of Street Services. Are there policies about what the city will and will not pick up?
No, certainly, if this is an item that may expose our workers to an unsafe condition, let's say body secretions, hazmats, stuff like that, we would not pick it up. But if it's a bulky item, let's say a couch, a sofa, and there's construction debris, a lot of times when the response crew gets to the location, they may not have the proper equipment to pick it up, and they may have to come back and bring mechanized equipment to remove it. But certainly, if it's a normal illegal dumping, like bulky items, construction debris, wood, cabinets, whatever, we will pick it up.
And Pat, can I just intervene for a second?
This is Councilwoman Perry, yes.
To let people know that when they call in, try and be as specific as possible in telling the operator what's been dumped, so that when the crew comes out, they actually do have an opportunity to bring the right equipment.
So not just say there's stuff in the alley.
No, they got to be specific. It's really helpful if they're specific, and the operators should tell people that. So it helps sanitation bring the right equipment or the right number of people out. You know, when I discovered this man in the alley, we needed 10 trucks to take his junk out of the alley. I never would have, you know, it's hard to even fathom.
Wow. Lucille is calling from Hollywood. Lucille, go ahead.
Hi, this is Lucille Saunders, Jan Perry, and I'm from West Los Angeles. I need to point out that a 311 call will only allow one large refuge pickup a year.
All right, Lucille, thank you. Jan Perry, so if you've got a sofa to discard, you can do one a year, but what about somebody who wants to be...
I don't know if that's accurate, because we have constituents who call...
Okay.
You know, many times a
Nazario
week.
Sauceda, are people limited to one big call, one big 311 call pickup a year?
Not to the best of my knowledge. I'm with the Bureau of Street Services, and typically the Bureau of Sanitation will pick up bulky items. To the best of my knowledge, no. They can call and they can repeatedly schedule the removal of bulky items.
And that's what my constituents do. They do call repeatedly.
Right.
And yeah. Jennifer Moran, you found that to be the case at the East Hollywood Neighborhood Council?
Yes, I found that to be the case. Like I said, the only thing I find it difficult to identify when there's a pile of trash, or, you know, which, as we know from Robert Lopez's story, it accumulates, you know, it's like a magnet for more trash, what a pile of trash is specifically. It's just a pile of trash, and it gets bigger and bigger. So that's one difficulty with being specific, and I don't know what I can do to address that.
Sometimes some of our constituents take photos, and that's really helpful, and send them or PDF them to the council office. And they can say things like, yes, it's a pile of trash, but I see some couches, some chairs, you know, some slabs of concrete. And that way, then, the department knows they need to bring out heavier equipment to be able to lift these things up.
Okay. The L.A. Times had video taken of this illegal dumping in and around Los Angeles over the course of its investigation. There will be a link to that video later today on our website, kpcc.org, and click on Pat Morrison if you'd like to see it. Susan is calling from West Los Angeles. Susan, go ahead.
Yes, I'm wondering why the city stopped a wonderful program. It was an alley closure program. You had to get the majority assent from people on both sides of the alley in your neighborhood, and then the city came in. They built gates with locks, and they landscaped the alley with wonderful drought-resistant plants and trees, and mulched it, and it became, we did it in our neighborhood, and it was fantastic.
All
no
right.
No more sofas dumped in the alley, and a wonderful, wonderful place to walk and have a good time.
Susan, thank you. Jan Perry, what happened to that program?
It was a budget decision made a couple of years ago to curtail the program. As for landscaping and making drought-tolerant plantings in the alley, the city did not actually do that. She may have been working with Clean and Green or the Conservation Corps to do something in addition to that. Some of the block clubs and some of the areas have done different things with their alleys, but that was not part of the alley closure program. But it was a budget decision, unfortunately. It was a good program. It did help slow down the dumping. It didn't entirely stop it. I mean, if you have somebody who's a dumper on your block and you have a closed alley and they don't respect the fact that the alley is closed, and we still encounter that where we still have to go and try to help people clean up their closed alleys on top of the ones that aren't gated.
Robert Lopez, how much of this problem, this escalating problem, is traced to budget cuts?
Well, I mean, that's obviously a hard sort of question to answer empirically. Certainly, one can say, though, the more enforcement you have, the more investigators that are out there staking out alleys when dumping occurs, typically early in the morning, late at night, the more likelihood that violators will be caught, and then the greater chance that this type of activity will decrease because people will be held accountable for their actions. The gated program certainly did help a number of alleys, but as the councilwoman said, that was discontinued, I believe, in 2004 because of budget cuts in part. Certainly, more resources for more crews to go out there and respond quicker would be very helpful. Public Works, lot cleaning division, they have, I believe it is, about 10 people dedicated to the worst areas of South L.A., including the councilwoman's area. But the six people responsible for her area also are responsible for downtown and Boyle Heights. I mean, that's a huge swath of territory.
And to be
really honest with you, sometimes they get deterred by massive drops of construction rubble. I saw this myself when I went out with a ride-along. We were headed down to Watts to clean some alleys, and as we were headed down there, we sort of stumbled across 8 tons of dirt and rocks dumped along Grand Avenue near 60th Street. A so-called belly drop where trucks come off the freeway, huge trucks that have these Bombay-like doors, and they just drive and they open the doors at the bottom of their trucks and drop these huge loads while they're moving, and they just escape onto the freeway. That Grand Avenue corridor is infamous for these belly drops.
Well, that's the one that's adjacent to the 110 freeway on the right-of-way owned by the state, and it is, at the end of the month, the number one area that we have for illegal dumping in residential areas.
Jan Perry, we have to get going, but can you give very quick advice to your constituents
Yes.
and those in other districts about what they should do?
be aggressive, be assertive when you call in, be specific, and be determined. You may have to call 311 more than once to make sure your case is being handled. And if that is not satisfactory to you, you need to call your counsel person and ask them to intervene on your behalf.
In other words, raise hell.
That's right, raise hell.
All right. Jan Perry, council member for the 9th District, thank you so much.
Take care.
Nazario Saucedo is with the Bureau of Street Services at the Department of Public Works. Jennifer Moran, thanks. East Hollywood Neighborhood Council, and Robert Lopez, reporter for the LA Times, who spent a couple of months documenting the dumping of tons and tons of illegal trash in the alleys and streets of Los Angeles. I'm Pat Morrison. Today, as we've been saying, is the first full day that same-sex marriage licenses have been issued in the state of California. Some couples have been together for a long time, are going to wait a little bit to get married. Among them, George Takei and his partner. George Takei is the actor, star of Star Trek, the music you just heard. He and his partner, Brad Altman, join me. Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Hello, Pat. Thank you for that stellar musical introduction.
I'm sure you said that before. You may have heard this before, but I have to ask, how do you feel about boldly going where almost no man has gone before?
It is a glorious feeling. It is an historic feeling, and it is stellar.
We are beaming, Pat.
Now,
so because of that introduction, we're using all the puns.
Okay, well, now that we've got that out of our systems altogether, you're not getting married until September 14th. Why are you waiting? I mean, after 21 years, is there no rush?
No, we wanted to do it absolutely perfectly. And we had decided that we want to have our union in the forum of democracy. We're getting married in the democracy forum of the Japanese American National Museum, and they have certain dates that are available, and we have certain dates because our calendars are quite packed, and September was the month and also the date that fit perfectly. So we
besides, I want to remind everybody that weddings take a lot of planning. There's a lot of work involved.
Indeed there is.
And so all those details that take so much time will take you until September to get all organized.
Yes, thank God we have that time to do it right.
So, Mr. Takei, what is the symbolic purpose of the Democracy Forum as the location for your wedding?
Well, it was democratic process that made this possible. We're getting closer and closer to the true ideals of democracy. The California Supreme Court ruled that equality in marriage is the law of California. Equality. You know, the ideal of this country is all men, in the generic sense, are created equal. And we're getting one step closer to that ideal. There are people that define marriage as between a man and a woman. But, you know, we know all the divorces and all the other problems with male-female weddings. We've been together for over 21 years now, and so we know that the true bond of marriage is love. Love is what defines a marriage.
Now, Mr. Altman, I gather you popped the question after you learned that the California Supreme Court, this would have been a month ago, legalized same-sex marriage. You did the romantic thing. You got down on one knee, but it was in the kitchen, and Mr. Takei was eating a sandwich?
Yeah, and I asked George to marry me, and I wasn't really surprised, Pat, but he said he would. And today, you know, the importance of today is that it's the first time that all Californians, or George and I, have a right to get a license, and I'm really, really happy.
Well, let me give you a little detail on that proposal. We had talked about it when we knew that the Supreme Court's ruling would be coming down soon. So we had the news on literally 24 hours, and we happened to be having lunch, and I had my mouth full of sandwiches. And, you know, I had intended to ask Brad, but I wasn't in a position to do that. And suddenly, Brad fell down, I thought. And I looked down, I said, what are you doing? And there he is on his knees saying, George, will you marry me? And I said, darn it, I meant to do it. You beat me to it. So that's the factual detail.
And I gather, Mr. Altman, that you're the one who's revealed what it is you're both going to be wearing.
Well, that became very controversial, Pat, because I said to one AP reporter that we're going to wear white tuxedos, and then George said, oh, I guess you made the decision without consulting me. So then
the wedding's off.
I told another reporter we're going to wear business suits, and then George, oh, you made another decision. So we got into a big argument, of course, and now we talked to Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov in the original series, who's our best man, and Walter decided it's two against one, Pat. Now Walter and George have ganged up against me because they're going to both wear white dinner jackets, and I have to wear one too. So that's
Walter,
the answer.
Walter is objective, and he did his duty as a good best man.
Well, yeah. you were outvoted on that, I guess, Mr. Altman.
Yep.
So are you concerned at all, as some couples we've been hearing from throughout the day, about the November vote to ban same-sex marriage as a constitutional amendment in California?
Well, you know, we live in a democracy, and they have their right to do that. But, their own opinion, the freedom of speech. But what they need to understand is, you know, they're basing their argument on their religious belief, their religious values. In this state, and certainly all across this country, we have a diversity of faiths. We're Buddhists. There are people of the Jewish faith. There are people that subscribe to Hinduism. You know, there's all this diversity. And as they want respect for their faith, they need to be equally respectful of other faiths as well. One right they do not have is the right to write into law their own personal religious beliefs and traditions, and then make that law apply to everyone. They really need to know the history of the United States. This nation was founded by people who were fleeing religious persecution, religious tyranny. And that's precisely what they're repeating here again.
And the other thing, real quickly, is that, you know, I've heard that, you know, if George and I get married in September, that, you know, we're contributing to the crumbling or the destruction of the institution of marriage. And I find that such a joke, because George and I have been together more than 21 years through sickness and health and all those things. And we're the perfect example of a committed, loving couple. And all we're going to do is strengthen the institution of marriage.
And on September 14th, your families will be joining you, your friends?
Yes, absolutely. Family, relatives, dear friends. Unfortunately, the Democracy Forum holds only 200 people, and we have a list of names.
Oh, boy.
3,500, and we just added another one, 3,501 names.
I see long sessions over this one. Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Nice talking to you.
George, good chatting with you, Pat.
Thank you both, Brad Altman and George Takei, who will be married September 14th at the Democracy Forum at the Japanese American National Museum in downtown Los Angeles.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by Rotary International. Although polio is a distant memory to most Americans, it still threatens children in parts of Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. To help rid the world of this crippling disease, Rotary clubs everywhere are trying to raise $100 million to match a grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You can learn more about the push to end polio forever at rotary.org/endpolio.
This is 89.3 KPCC Traffic and Weather at kpcc.org. Good afternoon, I'm Hetty Lynn Hurdies. California Supreme Court has handed a new victory to criminal prosecutors in a dispute over genetic evidence. KPCC's Molly Peterson reports that it might change the way lawyers talk to juries about DNA.
At Dennis Nelson's murder trial, the prosecutor told jurors that the odds of matching crime scene DNA with Nelson's record in a state database were 1 in 960 sextillion. Very long odds meant to convey high certainty. The jury convicted Nelson, and his lawyer objected that the statistic was misleading. But in a 33-page decision, the state Supreme Court said it's okay to use what's called a rarity statistic to explain genetic evidence during a criminal trial. The decision also could open the door to another DNA statistic, one defense attorney's favor. In a footnote, the court noted that a more conservative statistic culled directly from genetic databases may also make good evidence. Scientists, like lawyers, are divided about whether characterizations of DNA like rarity are useful in the legal system. So the odds are slim that the legal system will figure out just how to deal with this kind of evidence anytime soon. Molly Peterson, 89.3 KPCC.
Many Chinese homes still sit in ruins after last month's earthquake, but one person's rubble is another's treasure, as the payoff for raw materials picked up from the wreckage is worth more than you might think. More coming up on Marketplace next here on 89.3 KPCC.
I'm Pat Morrison. 8 years ago, Californians voted 61-39% against legalizing same-sex marriages, but 2008 is a different year. There is a similar measure on the November ballot, but now same-sex marriages, as you have been hearing, are a fait accompli. The state Supreme Court on a 4-3 ruling declared that there is no impediment to them constitutionally in California, but the ballot measure is being fought out and probably going to be fought expensively. We're talking about the politics of that measure in the wake of the Supreme Court decision and of the hundreds and hundreds of marriages being legalized across California today. Karen England joins me, Executive Director of Capital Resource Institute, part of the Project Marriage Coalition that supports the constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage. Ms. England, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Jeffrey Kors, Executive Director of Equality California. It's a nonprofit working to ensure and promote dignity, safety, and equality for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered Californians. Mr. Kors, thank you.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Ms. England, as I said, it's 8 years later from the last time Californians voted on this. There are now marriages being performed across the state of California between same-sex couples. How different is this campaign going to be?
Well, it's going to be different because, again, we had the Supreme Court step in and legislate from the bench. So now you've got people who may or may not agree with the redefinition of marriage, but definitely don't agree with the will of the people being overturned by four judges. So, you know, again, it'll be different, but I'm confident that we will reaffirm the definition of marriage.
Some of the polling, including some by the Los Angeles Times, shows the numbers much, much closer than the 61-39 margin from 8 years ago. Do you think people are changing their minds about same-sex marriage?
Well, I don't know if they're changing their minds about same-sex marriage. I mean, Californians are liberal and fair in what they want, you know, people treated equally. And so it depends on how you're phrasing the question when you're doing that polling. You know, we did an internal poll after the field poll, and we were at 56% supporting traditional marriage and opposing gay marriage on the other side. So it really depends on how you ask the question, how and when the polling's done, and the field poll and several others are very ambiguous polls.
Jeffrey Kors with Equality California, there's, of course, going to be a no campaign being mounted against this measure on the November ballot. How is it going to be promoting itself?
You know, we're going to talk about what this issue is really about, which is lesbian and gay couples getting married. You know, Californians want to treat people fairly. They don't want to treat people differently. And the polling, the field poll, showed a majority of California voters now support marriage for lesbian and gay couples. And, you know, marriage is a fundamental right. People should get to choose who they marry. They don't want government telling them who they can marry. And it's a fundamental right, like freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And we're confident the field poll shows a dramatic change. Every poll shows a dramatic change on this issue. And the reality is the people are going to not vote to ban marriage. And I think the other side knows it. And it's why they keep on trying to change the discussion away from lesbian and gay couples. They want to talk about courts. They want to talk about other issues. But the reality is people are going to be voting on whether lesbian and gay couples should be denied marriage in the state constitution. And we believe the voters are going to vote no.
Mr. Kors, does it make a difference now that you have people who have been married under California law? Will you be featuring people like that, some of these couples, in the advertising against this particular ballot measure?
We're going to be focusing on couples. That's everything you're seeing right now. We're talking about couples, lesbian and gay couples who have been together, who are committed, who want to enjoy marriage. And if you look at it, you know, yesterday, Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin, they've been together since Dwight Eisenhower was president. What does marriage say than that? It's about commitment. These two people have been together for 55 years. Why would anyone want to vote to deny them the right to marry each other? They are exactly what marriage is about, and we so support the institution of marriage. And I think this is going to be all about the couples. I think that, you know, Karen and the people on the other side want to talk about everything but the couples, because they know, like we know, that as the public sees lesbian gay couples getting married, that they're going to realize that lesbian gay couples want exactly what everyone wants, to meet someone, fall in love, live happily ever after.
And, so Jeffrey, no one is keeping them from that.
Hang on one second, Ms. Englund.
That's why they have continued time and time again. They've gone to court to ask the court to stay these until after November because they don't want the public to see lesbian gay couples. It's why they have gone to county clerks to not obey the law. You know, that's not what people want in the state. People want people treated fairly.
All right, Mr. Kors. Ms. Englund, with the Protect Marriage Coalition, how about that?
Well, I would say that we don't. They can fall in love and live happily ever after all they want. This is about whether or not the people of California have the right to define marriage. And it is okay and perfectly legal for people to define the word marriage. If marriage was only about love and commitment, then, Jeffrey, is it okay for two men and a woman or two women and one man to be, quote-unquote, married? Why are you limiting it to two people? Why can't we open the doors to love and commitment of three people?
Ms. Englund, hang on a minute, please. Ms. Englund, is it going to make your campaign more difficult, the fact that these marriages have been, these marriages have taken place, that they have a legal wedding license, that we will be seeing, you know, their faces in, clearly in some of the advertising, against the ban on same-sex marriage?
Well, you know what? I think it could go either way because I think people are also seeing it and saying, hey, wait a minute. This is not – I'm for equality, but I don't want them stealing the word marriage. So I think it's a double-edged sword. I think there will probably be some that are sympathetic towards the whole emotional aspect of it, but others are going to look at that and go, hey, wait a minute. I want you to have equal rights, but marriage is marriage, and it belongs with the proper traditional definition, and that is between one man and one woman. And we've given you all the rights that you've asked for, and that doesn't give you the right to hijack the word marriage.
Mr. Kors, let me ask you about some concerns that I saw in the LA Times and heard on KPCC today that gay couples were being the hint was being dropped. Look, don't get too wacky. You know, don't provide fodder, visual fodder of showing up in odd costumes to get married and things like that, and that the other side can use against you. Are you concerned about some of the images that will be taken in this campaign?
No, we're actually focused on people being who they are and getting married. That's what's important, to get the stories of real people out there so the public knows about why lesbian gay couples want to get married, that they become familiar with it, and that's what's been happening. Yes, we know the other side will try and make this about something else. They always do. But, you know, similarly, I've seen them send emails to their list saying, you know, don't protest these weddings. The public doesn't want to. We'll get mad at us for that. Yet they're still, unfortunately, out there protesting people's marriages, which is such a horrendous thing to do on such a joyous day for so many people. But ultimately, you know, this is about people getting married. That's what this is about.
Ms. Englund, will some of those images be images that you can use in your own campaign and some of the many commercials I expect we'll be seeing on television?
Well, I don't know what commercials will be being made. That's quite, you know, we're months away from that. But I do know, again, that this hijacking of the word marriage, I mean, Jeffrey, we've met, I know you. It's not that we don't understand what lesbians want. It's that we believe the definition of marriage is between a man and a woman, and that should remain the definition, and that the court overstepped its bounds. I'm not trying to distract the issue, talk about something else. I'm talking about the definition of marriage. The people decided what it should be. The judges came in and said, no, gay couples want it to be redefined, therefore we're going to help them redefine it. And this is just going to place this language in the Constitution. The people want a traditional definition of marriage. You can live happily ever after. You can love whoever you want. But if you want to get married, you have to fit the definition of marriage.
Mr. Kors?
Well, you know, Californians, and I think we'll see this, we saw it in the field poll, don't want to treat people differently. They don't want to put in the Constitution treating people differently and treating people unfairly. And if you want to go to the traditional definition of marriage, it used to only be between people of the same races. Women used to be property of men. And Karen,
the definition was still a man and a woman, Jeffrey.
Karen, let me finish. We do
know each
other.
Don't deceive the public. It was a man and a woman.
Karen, you never let anyone finish. So we know each other because you and your group are opposed to domestic partnership. You and your group are opposed to safe schools legislation. You and your group are opposed to employment protections for gay people. So for you to come on air and claim that you're fine with people being treated is a blatant lie. People can go to your website and see that you oppose any rights for lesbian gay people. And for you to actually come on the radio and lie about it and say that you support religious values, those aren't the religious values I was raised with.
All right, Mr. Kors, let's let Ms. Englund respond to that.
Well, I would encourage people to go to our website. It's absurd to say we don't support safe schools. We do support safe schools. All children should be safe in school, and a school should discipline children that aren't treating other children with respect and safely. And we believe that discipline in the classroom is the answer to that, not promoting textbooks and curriculum.
Okay, what about same-sex partnerships,
again,
domestic partnerships?
This is about marriage. We support traditional marriage.
Do you support domestic partnerships?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you support domestic partnerships?
No, we didn't support government domestic partnerships. We support if a private business wants to do that, that's fine. But that's on the books. That is not anything that's going to be taken away or debated in this marriage, this constitutional amendment. This is whether or not they have the word marriage. And it wasn't enough for them to have civil unions and domestic partnerships. Now they want to take the word marriage. Of course, they want it for them, but not for three people who love each other, are committed, and have been together for 50 years.
Okay, let's hear from some listeners here. Helen is calling from South Pasadena. Helen, go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to take issue with Ms. England's comments regarding the hijacking of the term marriage. As a member of a biracial couple, her point that, you know, that gays and lesbians are hijacking the term marriage, well, it used to be that interracial marriage was illegal, and it wasn't the courts legalized interracial marriage, that blacks and Asians were allowed to marry Asian people. So I take great, great offense to that. And also, after 13 years of marriage and two children, I'm going to stand in front of my family and my minister and my rabbi, you know, to finally consecrate my relationship legally in front of my children. So I take great offense to anyone who claims to protect the term marriage for themselves and not open it up to people who truly, truly want to make the commitment to their families and to their friends and to their children.
Helen, thank you very much for your call. Ms. England?
Yes, Helen, I would say that, you know, I'm sorry that you are so offended. I don't want to keep you from making any commitment in front of your friends or your family. You are more than welcome to do that. However, interracial marriage, the entire reason that was deemed not to be legal or to be considered discriminatory is because it still was a man and a woman, and you couldn't based on race. Even though interracial marriage was not allowed, the definition of marriage was still between a man and a woman, which is why the Constitution and we have changed that, is because it was inherently unfair. It was a man and a woman, and it was discriminatory based on race. And so this definition has still been the same. It has been between a man and a woman. The definition in the dictionary throughout time has always been a man and a woman.
All right, Ms. Englund, there's a question I'd like to ask Mr. Kors. We're talking about how the campaigns on the amendment to ban same-sex marriage in California, to put that in the Constitution, will unspool as we roll toward November in the wake of the legal same-sex marriages now permitted by the state Supreme Court. Mr. Kors, the point that Ms. Englund made was about numbers, that once that same-sex marriage is legalized, what's to ban three people in a marriage, for example?
You know, the California Supreme Court was really clear that this decision is about marriage between two people. In fact, until 1978, California law said marriage was a contract between two people, and it got changed at that point. So historically, this limitation was not on the books. And the court was really clear. This does not open the door to anything else. This is about getting to choose the one person you want to marry. That's
Why
what this
can't
is
you
about.
Choose two?
And again, can I finish, Karen? You are really rude. This is about equal protection. California's Constitution has a founding principle, is that all people must be treated the same. And everyone has the right to choose to marry the person they love. Government doesn't get to choose that.
Okay, Mr. Kors, but Mr. Kors, let me ask you, would you be on Ms. England's side if there were a constitutional amendment to allow three or four people in a marriage, for example?
There's no need for a constitutional amendment on that issue. That's not being discussed right now, and our side was really clear in the Supreme Court. That is not something we support.
Let's hear from more listeners then. David is calling from Northridge. David, thank you for your call.
Hi, two very important points. Churches have the right to define marriage. Government cannot adopt those churches without meeting constitutional standards. So if the church defines marriage a certain way, that's its right. But the church cannot ask the government to adopt the same definition if it violates the Constitution. The people can vote for a definition, but that vote, if it violates the Constitution, is wrong. Like if we voted Mexicans to be slaves, that would be struck down, hopefully, by the Supreme Court, even though we voted for it. Constitutional amendment is totally legit. I think it reveals the dark side of these extra-religious people, but they don't realize it, so hopefully everybody else will. As far as the last comment, which is three or four people getting married, if heterosexual couples were allowed to marry three people, but gay and lesbian couples were not, that would trigger the same equal protection clause.
Okay,
but
David.
We're not talking about that.
All right, David, thank you very much. Benjamin is calling from Silver Lake. Benjamin, thanks for your call.
Hello. Yes. I just wanted to make a parallel between between using the word citizen, the way that African Americans used to be considered three-fifths of a citizen, and how women voters were not even considered perhaps voters in the past, and how she's making the same parallel between the word marriage and those two things currently. And I think it's time for us to get a little bit more progressive and think ahead in regards to how our world is changing and how the definitions of things need to be changed.
All right, Benjamin, thank you very much. We only have less than a minute. I'd like each of you to make your case. Jeffrey Kors with Equality California.
Sure. You know, again, this is about lesbian and gay couples getting married, and it's about treating people fairly. It's about Californians not believing people should be treated differently. And it's about ultimately allowing people, not government, to decide who we marry. I should be able to choose who I marry, and the government should not make that choice for me. And I think the opposition will continue to want to talk about everything other than lesbian and gay couples who are in committed long-term relationships wanting to marry the person of their choice.
Mr. Kors, thank you. Karen England?
Well, this is about restoring the definition of marriage. The definition of marriage has never been committed, loving relationships, and whatever that is gets to be marriage. Marriage has been defined as between a man and a woman until the Supreme Court overruled that. And so this constitutional amendment is necessary. The people have spoken on this issue, and I'm confident they will speak again in November.
The measure is on the November ballot, to constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage. Today's the first day that same-sex marriages have been legally performed in the state of California. You'll hear more about it throughout the day here on KPCC and on National Public Radio. I'm Pat Morrison. Thank you for listening.
Little League. Music